to Edith Thompson on Monday, December 19th, 1982. We are sitting in her kitchen at Monroe Trailer Court in Green River, Wyoming. And it's a cold, wintry day here in Green River. Okay? Now, first of all, will you tell me where you were born?
This is Edith Thompson speaking. I was born in Presho, South Dakota.
Okay.
My people came from Germany, and we spoke German at home. My father also spoke Polish and Russian.
Your mom and your mother and father came from Germany?
Yes.
Okay. Can you just go on? Anything else? How many were there in your family?
They had immigrated from Germany, and my older sister was 2 years old. She was born in Kiev, Ukraine.
Okay. So you were born then. Was there a midwife in attendance, or do you know anything about when you were born?
No, I can't remember.
You can't remember?
Let's see.
When did you move to Wyoming then?
Well, I had gone to school around Ardmore, South Dakota. There were a lot of
don't worry.
We kids attended country school, and we had a wonderful teacher, a tall, gray-haired spinster named Miss Heberlink. And I know she has a star in heaven, because certainly she didn't have a bunch of a dumber yokels than we kids were. And last year when I was at the Ardmore reunion at Hot Springs, South Dakota, I met an old classmate. He was of Russian-German descent, and we started to reminisce, and we spoke endearingly of our teacher, Miss Charlotte Hebert, and George, who probably went through the fourth grade, and he said, "Yes, Edith, Miss Heberling was a wonderful teacher. She learned us good."
Well, about when, how long were you in South Dakota then?
Well, I think I was in South Dakota about, 25 when I went to Midwest,
mm-hmm.
1925, and I lived there for 50 years.
Wow. Okay, what took you to Midwest? Why?
Jobs.
Jobs?
The great Salt Creek oil field gained honor, dishonor, during the Teapot Dome scandal. And that's where we live, right, you know, bordering it.
Mm-hmm.
It was the era of Prohibition, the Charleston, and Dixieland jazz.
Oh.
And I told son Billy, that's how I got knock-kneed, dancing the Charleston.
What did you do? What kind of work did you do in Midwest?
There was a large company hotel. It was a wonderful company to work for. It was the Midwest Refining Oil Company. And there were 30 of us waitresses, called hashers, and we fed several hundred men in 1 hour. It was quite a record, and the food was delicious. And the company provided very amply for us, with lights and gasoline, or anything. We'd leave the lights burning all night, the drum out there in the garage, so the Model T Ford wouldn't freeze up. And I know this seems kind of silly to say, but could I live my life over again, which is kind of out of place. But I don't think I'd choose a better place. There's where I met my husband, C.W. Bill Thompson, who was an alto saxophonist. He had his own bands. And he had previously worked on the wooden rigs. And then he had several bands. And of course, the Midwest was a clean little town. It was a company owned, and everybody kept the lawns nice and green. And around us, though, were the red light district towns like Edgerton and Ogilvie and Salt Creek. And the crowds would gather there, and every once in a while the cops would come out from Casper. They were. But in those honky-tonks and those joints, they were always alerted. Mm-hmm. Hide the whiskey or this and that, here come the cops. Well, they bought the cops off.
Okay, but red light district, you mean like prostitution and that?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And looking back these 50 years, I admire yet how little trouble was ever caused by the kids. I don't know of one serious offense. It was really what you call the good old days. Neighbor helped neighbor. If you mm-hmm. went to Casper and left your washing on the line, your neighbor would run over and take down the sheets and so forth and fill cases. If they did that today, of course, they'd be arrested. Now, if somebody were ill, here would come a loaf of bread, a cake, soup. If there was a baby, taken home. That's all gone. I regret that.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, when you don't know your next door neighbor, it gets lonesomer than ever.
Mm-hmm. What did you do for entertainment in Midwest?
What I did for entertainment? Mm-hmm. Went to dances.
Did you? Did they have a lot of them?
Oh, I should say there was a place to go every night. Of course, on Saturday night, huge crowds gathered. The town of Salt Creek. It was kind of too bad they didn't call Midwest Salt Creek, but there were two, and that was confusing. So that's why that was called Midwest. And all around us in this town, there were bootleggers. There were bootleggers in Edgerton, well, all over. And even there was a little old lady who had a little shack there in one of the camps. And she made the best beer. And that's the way it was.
Mm.
And I don't ever honestly remember anybody being, you know, arrested or taken to jail. Well, the cops had come out from Casper pursuing another car that was loaded with whiskey. And that's what they called the dog leg turn. The driver would turn around real quick like and pass him and head off in another direction.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all in cahoots with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody made money on that, and the good times.
Okay.
1925. I went to Shadron, Nebraska, where I worked my way through school to get my high school diploma.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the, what I wanted more than anything else was book learning, which my mother opposed. She thought that was a waste of time. But to my dear mother, to plow a straight furrow was a great accomplishment. So, and she always, I don't know, she was really angry when she catch me reading. And oh, my father also became a miner in the Black Hills of Leeds, South Dakota. And Papa had been offered the opportunity to be hired by the officials there in Washington, D.C. as an interpreter of foreign languages.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother said the land is free, Albert. We'll go. The land, it had to be settled, but the land was not free. It was a prairie country, and you could make a living on a quarter section.
Mm-hmm.
Of land. The land was hostile. The raging blizzards and the terribly hot summer and the storms and the tornadoes. It was quite an experience to have. And then my father and mother were divorced, and of course the kids were on their own. Well, in one of the places I thought if I could become acquainted with the people who were educated, like high school teachers and principals and so forth. So I did get a job working my way through school in this one year with T.R. Crawford family. He was a superintendent of the Shadron High School.
Mm-hmm.
As the years went by, he became the stepfather of Dick Cavett. His daughter, Dorcas. And I still carry on the correspondence. And then after I had graduated, I would always send the articles I had written for the Casper Tribune Herald to my professor. And I had her sit down almost and cry. And he had retired. And he said, Edith, how did you do this research? That's what I'd like to do. I thought, great God. There that man was 30 years old. He had his PhD already, and he asked me. But like I say, these letters here, that so I just started writing and getting articles. I'd get printed and paid too, a few dollars, for these articles in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I have 30 some articles that Billy is going to have published sometime in one format.
Mm-hmm. Well, when did you go back to Midwest then?
In 26. And I was going to earn some money there at the big house so I could go to the normal at Spearfish, South Dakota. But that wasn't meant to be. I was not meant to be a teacher because I met Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. A wickedly handsome man.
Mm-hmm.
Had a wonderful life. We were married 11 years before we had Billy. I'd lost a little boy. Billy had a wonderful father, and I had a wonderful husband.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the big house, is that the hotel. The hotel, okay. So can you clarify that?
That really was something.
Well, when were you and Bill married?
December of 26.
Okay. Then you stayed in Midwest?
Yes, and Bill was employed by the refining company Midwest, but in the winter of 27. And Bill and I went to Blackfoot, Idaho, where his mother, Emily Thompson, lived on the reservation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Emma who inspired me to write about Beaver Dick. You know, honey, when they're looking for the roots, it's too late. You ask the average person, what was the maiden name of your grandma? They wouldn't know. So it's too bad. It's too bad. And we gathered around the table there, and of course, we had a trap line about 15 miles and had our tent up there and ropes around the willows for the horses. And Mother, I'd go with Mother in the sleigh, and she'd talk about Beaver Dick.
Mm-hmm.
If she had talked, she'd try to tell the kids something, mention around the kitchen table, and they say, oh, Ma, for heaven's sake, you're not going to start that again. And that's it. I listened. And I listened to my mother, and I listened to my father about the Wagners and the Schultzes. And that, I repeat, it's too bad that you wait until it's too late. Who was Uncle John or Aunt Minnie or so forth? And some of the people who write their what memoirs they have don't realize that it doesn't matter. It isn't one bit of interest to anybody else, any other,
mm-hmm.
unless, like the Schultzes and the Wagners. You can characterize those people, like Uncle Rudolph and his
mm-hmm.
long mustache.
Yeah.
And the Fighting Schultzes. And everyone in this, I'm writing, Billy encouraged me to write Wagner Schultz history. And believe you me, and Billy, I said, I'm going to soften some of that. And Billy said, don't you do it, Mom. He said, put everything down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's titled, I don't know what, it's titled Cry Eda. E-D-A-H. My parents couldn't pronounce the TH, so they called me Eda.
I see.
And I have, in this style of writing, if there's something sad and tragic in one chapter, I see to it immediately that the next one has humor, and you have to laugh.
Mm. Sure.
And otherwise, it's readable, and I've been told several times, that the Beaver Dick story reads more like a novel. Than it does an ordinary history book. Now, history in itself is dry.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can now personify that character, now, for instance, if you'll notice in the book, the Beaver Dick book, since I went to the old school and we were taught to throw the four W's at the reader, who, what, when, and where. So you will find out, and you read two pages or three, and there you are. Who is he? What's he doing? Where's he heading for? Beaver Dick riding out of his place, heading for Fort Hall and the Utah settlements, and I identify him immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, there was discontent among the Shoshones and the Bannocks, and I throw this hint out. He knew he was heading for trouble, and whether or not he would keep his scalp remained to be seen. So,
mm-hmm.
okay, there's a flashback about the history and the lineage of the Bannocks and the Western Shoshones.
Mm-hmm. Now, in Beaver Dick, most of that was journals that had been kept, that was based on?
Well, there's a story behind the story, and Mother talked about her father, Beaver Dick, who had kept a diary, and the years went by, and you know that 40 years went by, and she kept talking about Dr. Penrose, whose request was honored. He wanted Beaver Dick's diaries sent to him for safekeeping.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they were at Beaver Dick's death. But 40 years went by, and Mother said, oh, she said, none of the Penroses can be alive, and I don't even know where we could write. And I said, well, we'll just find out where Boyce Penrose lives. Philadelphia. And I asked him, did he or did he not keep his father's records of Beaver Dick,
mm-hmm.
or did he destroy them? I was overjoyed when the letter came in a great big packet, and that's how we got hold of that those diaries.
Mm-hmm.
Other historians would copy each other and repeat, and the legendary was not legends were not not enough. So we had that, but had it not been for Boise keeping those records for 40 years and spot, very little would be known about Beaver Dick.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the marvels, and I'm sorry that the three of the supplements were left out of our book.
Mm.
How we visited the Eastern Shoshone Reservation. Billy was just about 18 months old, and we tried to find out who Jenny was in all our research, and I'm sorry that isn't in the book, and if it's ever revised again, I'm going to insist that be included. We visited this reservation. W.H. Jackson, the famous pioneer photographer, told us that Beaver Dick had told him that Jenny was not a Bannock, she was a Washakie's people. And we located the chief and the chief's son and the grandson of Chief Washakie, and Billy has these pictures, and I'm just so sorry they weren't used in the book.
Mm.
It shows Billy, 18 months old, hanging onto the cane of the son of the Chief Washakie. So that's all Billy heard all his life. He'd listened too.
Mm-hmm.
He heard about his great-grandfather, and he became intrigued. I'm only sorry that he didn't know my beloved mother, Emma Lee Thompson. She died in 40. And that he couldn't have known her. He was mm-hmm. He was only three.
Yeah. When you were in Midwest in your early years there, what about medicine doctors? Were they readily available?
Oh yes, they had a marvelous hospital, equipped with several doctors and about four nurses.
Mm-hmm.
They had a pool hall and they had a library, and originally. Your surgery was free, but they spoiled it. That's the way it always goes. Take advantage of it. So they'd have Aunt Minnie and Uncle Joe and so forth come up there and have operations charged to the company. So they said, the hell with that, and they cut it out. That applied to all of us. You know, good thing.
Mm-hmm. So the hospital was sponsored by the company?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And the meals, the delicious meals that were cooked three times a day, the breakfast and dinner and supper. And everything was neat and fast. Waitresses were wheeling the carts. I still don't believe it, but it's true. See, 30 waitresses, of course, we were off every 10th day. And we made a magnificent salary of $60 a month, clear. And the company furnished us the uniforms and laundered them and ironed them. And they were white, and we wore little white bands around our heads.
Did you have to pay for a place to stay, or they provided that too?
Well, my mother had a place where I stayed.
Uh-huh.
Oh yes, the first week I was there, they let me be there in the hotel, the Midwest Hotel.
Hmm.
This talk isn't organized very well.
Oh, it's okay. On medicine, I know, so many people think that birth control is such a new thing. We're talking about the birth control. What's birth control practice?
Well, I don't think I can answer that question.
You don't know anything or hear anything about it, or did doctors talk about it? Did they dispense materials?
No, that they did not. There's a joke about that. They'll say, well, okay, so you're going to go to bed with your husband. So you have a big glass of water. And that's all you have, and you go to sleep. It's a joke. I don't think I came to her. But you know, there really wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But today, how frank everything is.
Yes.
You know, in those days, even in books, all right, there'd be a love scene, like that story 3 weeks by Eleanor Glynn. There'd be a love scene. And so they'd be heading for the bedroom. And then she'd put stars and asterisks. And you could imagine what was going on here. Today, they don't leave anything to your imagination. They tell everything. And that's, I think it's gone a little bit too far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how about the company up there? Did they have any union problems? Union
No, sir. There were a couple of radicals who started that. They wanted to unionize. And my husband said, what the hell's the matter with you guys? What do you want? What more do you want?
Mm-hmm.
We have all the lights we need and the heater in the garage to warm up the Model Ts and a free hospitalization. Mm-hmm. So that dropped off. You know, there were just some radicals. Never was a union there.
Was it oil mining up there?
What?
Oil mining?
Yes, oil.
Okay,
gold.
Black gold. So did the guys get paid pretty well then?
The people, let's see, who worked on the pipeline and, of course, the big building, got $4 and a half a day.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a wonderful place to live.
Mm-hmm. Now, what did Bill do?
Well, he initiated the new method of welding, became an expert on that, and then he was field foreman. He's right over there too.
Mm-hmm. What were fashions like? I mean, were people conscious about what they wore?
Oh,
how
yes.
They dressed?
I still have my Charleston dress.
Yes.
Well, they were knee length. And we wore silk stockings, and we rolled our stockings and rouged our knees and shocked the people who watched us do the Charleston. Marvelous musicians, Dixieland Jazz, my favorite yet.
Mm. So the dancers were the main attraction?
Yeah, just, there were bars and restaurants and hotels. And of course, the company had no jurisdiction over the government of the outside towns. So
mm-hmm.
There's some place, as I said, to go every night. And the boys were so nice to us, and we were popular as all could be. Oh, brother, we were popular. They'd open the door and help us in on account of because there were about 10 men to every woman.
Oh, is there?
And they were very nice.
At the dance, somebody had said that the men dance with men sometimes. Did they ever do that?
Well, not that I remember. I mean, oh, they might have been silly.
Yeah.
No, no. Yes, sir, that's my baby. That's a Charleston piece.
Yeah.
And we competed for prizes. And this boy's, I can't think of his first name. His last name was Meshack. He was a dear young man, and he had, on his right foot, he had all his toes off. They were frozen.
Mm.
And he and I got out there, and we did the Charleston. He was my partner. And we won one of the prizes. Oh, the gaiety and the music. The 12th Street Rag and the, this old Edison we have in here, sometime he's on here, I'll play it for you, those Charleston pieces.
Mm-hmm.
When Billy made that cassette, he put that on for background music, Dixieland Jazz.
Hmm. That's interesting. That's what you're about. Was Midwestern mainly a town of just that company meetup?
Yes.
So
yes.
That was mainly what it was?
Yes, mainly what it was.
What was the population around, like, at
the height? It varied all the time, and they came and they went and they flocked in there, you know, and the heavy, deep depression. The stores were loaded with all beautiful things and clothes, and but you didn't have the money to buy.
And were there more people, like, say, in 1926 than there are now in Midwest?
Oh, yes. There were several thousand mm-hmm. that worked me out for the outlying camps.
Mm-hmm.
The gas plant and the maintenance and the drilling, they had their about five or six departments. They
mm-hmm.
helped each other.
Mm-hmm. Up in Midwest, what's something that happened to you or that you remember that's a real outstanding in your mind?
Well, I think what was outstanding, and I wrote an article about it, it was when the big house burned down, the whole hotel, and how the whistles blew and everything, and we just grieved. But I wrote this article called The Passing of the Big House, and I mentioned in this article how it was.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually that was discontinued. I suppose production was lessened.
Mm-hmm. Were there any prostitution in Midwestern?
Oh, no.
Was Midwest was controlled by the company?
Yes, sir, and there nobody, oh no, and it was a clean town, and the company laid the laws down. No shooting, or this and that, or no bootleg sold, but that wasn't exactly true, because I think I can safely say, including the Thompsons, everybody had a great big crock, 20-gallon crock, and made his own home brew beer, including us. Well, you'd go up the street and say, well, you could smell it, and we kept this in the bedroom, and everybody, even the poor, they put a cloth over it, and they had a little thing that a little siphon. They put the bottles out. I wish I'd saved some of those beer cases. They were wonderful chests, and put the capper on, and let the beer sit about day or two.
Well, how do you make beer?
Well, you buy the malt, and you could go to drugstores were loaded with it on the shelves, and they had all the products there. And well, my mother sold beer. She had a little place up on top of the hill, and she sold beer and whiskey. And the law had come out and say, Tilly, hide your booze, the law's coming out from Casper. But nobody was arrested, ever, for bootlegging, the individuals.
Did you ever go to any of the other towns and see the red light districts?
Oh, yes, they were all around us. And then once in a while, we'd go to KC, Wyoming. And Bill also played the violin. Everybody from every state, they flocked to Midwest during the Depression. The Missourians outnumbered us all. Therefore, and they liked their square dances, Bill played the fiddle. And I'd get in a square dance, and my partner would go this way, and I'd go that way, and finally we'd get together. But it was wonderful fun. And he had a collar, stomp this one. Mr. Casey over there at Edgerton. And he went like that and disrupted the music. And Bill said, for crying out loud, cut that out, you're throwing us all off key. And he was offended. The poor man was, he was calling the square dances. So I think that's when people say to me, Miss Thompson, that's odd, both of your men are musicians, why aren't you? And I said, well, I do have a talent. I said, I get a beer or two, and I can sing in German and throw the whole orchestra off key. And I said, as far as that goes, my acquaintanceship with the piano is in dusting it, and we aren't always on the best of terms.
Were there any fights that broke out, like at the dances?
Yes, but they didn't amount to a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. What were they usually over, a girl or?
Well, I suppose drinking too much. But looking back, I really marveled that there was so little of that. We worked hard and we played hard, and they called our generation, they would say of our generation, what are those kids coming to? Why don't they simmer down? We were always active. And of course, we took a long time in putting on mascara and rouge and our eyebrows. And now that I'm an old lady, when I should be doing that, I neglect it. You know, when you're young, all you need is a fresh complexion, maybe a little lipstick.
How about hairdos? Did you spend time?
Oh, yes. Marcel's.
Marcel's, what were they?
They were the flat waves.
Mm.
If you're ever in Billy's house, have him show you that their museum, and it shows pictures of me when I.
Oh.
And they call us flappers, of course.
So, well, where did you? Okay, being out there in Midwest, you were sort of isolated. Where did you get your ideas for your fashion? I mean, did you? Somebody have magazines you looked at, or up to date on
you
it?
You mean
or?
Clothes?
Clothes and hairdos and everything, yeah.
Well, it was universal, I think, all over the United States.
Mm-hmm.
The skirts were fringed, knee length, and we wore those cute little pouch hats, and with spit curls, I don't know what else to say. It was just as cute as it could be how some of those girls dressed, and there were some beautiful girls, and the men that would come in there. After supper and take sack lunches, and they worked on tower, which means they were working on the rigs.
Mm.
And of course, my great surprise was when they came over the hill from Casper, just 40 miles away, the rows and rows and rows of the steel derricks on every horizon.
What were the schools like up at Midwest?
Well, I'm sorry to say I can't say so much for the schools. I'm sorry. But Billy went to high school there, and I joke about it, say he went to school on the bluff. So right out right now, you go out there at the shed and see where Ma conjugated the verb and declined the noun. He had no idea what that meant. So as the years went by, he got his degree up there at Logan. And when the professor said, Thompson says something about English, but he said, you don't have, he did well. He said, when he taught English, he said he nearly killed him the first year. He said, I don't see where any of your records show that you had much English. And he said, sir, he said, my mother told me where it was, and she taught me. And that's the honor that son always pays me.
Mm-hmm. That's nice.
However, and you're talking about writing or English, it's a funny thing. Our superintendent, Harry Graham, at that time, and his wife, Rose, big, tall girl like me, kept in touch with Tulsa, where the company was represented, in Tulsa, Oklahoma. That was the main equipment. Well, a speaker came from Tulsa. He was invited to give a talk there at Midwest. And
when did we see this? When? About? When did he come?
Who?
The speaker.
Yes, and he was coming to Midwest to give the employees a talk. So mm-hmm. The tables were decorated and loaded with goodies and so forth and so on, but Harry could not be there. He was called out of town to hear this. He didn't hear the speaker. So when he returned to Midwest, his wife Rose, a teacher, an English teacher, told Harry, she said, Harry, she said, he gave a pretty good talk, but he has a terrible habit of splitting the infinitive and dangling the participle. Post haste, Harry sat down and fired this letter to the speaker, orator. From splitting the infinitive and dangling the participle, and that's the truth. So we were over at bar one night, and he was a grand little guy. Everybody just loved Harry. He was gruff and all that, but he had a heart as big as gold. And I said, Harry, I said, tell me, what does that mean? And he looked here, and he looked there, and I said, come on now. Do you know what it means to split the infinitive? And he said, well, he said, he said, those guys in Tulsa will never know, but he said, I don't need it.
Was he a teacher? Or?
He was our superintendent.
Oh, and this is when Billy was in school? Or?
Let's see, I guess we have done that. I forget just what year it was. But,
What did the kids do for entertainment up in the Midwest? Which have had quite a few kids.
Yes, pretty well. Pretty well. They had baseball and they had football and. Midwest was the first town in the United States that played football under the electric lights.
Oh, really?
And we had a swimming pool, too.
Hmm.
Shut that off a minute, honey. A bell knife. And they wondered in Oklahoma what in the world was going on there about that sewer. What kind of a sewer? It even made the Denver Post. You see, honey, how much there's so much, and there's so much humor,
oh,
too.
Yes. Sure. How about churches? Were there a lot of churches?
There was a Catholic church,
mm-hmm.
and just a congregational church. Pretty good, too.
Did most people go to church on Sunday?
Many of them did.
Mm-hmm.
I was probably nursing a headache with it, but yes. And we had good ministers.
Nursing a headache, you said?
Well, oh, there's so much. It's so long ago. My favorite article among these that I have, Billy's going to put in one format, is called When the Twenties Roared in Salt Creek. They really roared.
Did they?
And now it's almost obsolete. There are so many strangers in there. Empty houses. And although I feel so homesick and nostalgic for Midwest, I got out of there in the nick of time, being as how I was able to sell a home teepee. We had a nice house
mm-hmm.
for quite a bit of money that bought this trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And some of my friends couldn't sell their houses. Because the loans were too stiff.
Yeah.
So I was lucky that way, but I'd give anything. Speaking of my own peace of mind, and so if I lived in a little log hut out of Midwest or Edgerton, to be back there again, which is absolutely silly. I don't know half of those people anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I take them in the newspaper. But time marches on, and the great changes that have come in my era so old.
How about during the Depression and that? Did Midwest life change much, or?
No, not with the oil people. Nobody was laid off. There were outlying districts where some of the employees came out in Casper that were not associated with Midwest Oil Refining Company, which is known today as Amoco. By the way, I've got the Amoco Torch magazine that dear man sent me, and there's a little article in there about the book. John Freely. And they'd come to Midwest, they'd go to the store, and they'd want to know something about the history of Midwest, and the clerks over there say, well, look up Edith Thompson or Walter Schultz. And I was glad to do so. The head waitress at Midwest was Mexican, and boy, she lowered the boom on the waitresses. If she didn't like the way you had your spit curls or your makeup on, and she'd go to the manager, what was his name, Trudgeon, and have that waitress fired. That was the worst thing they could have done. Let her get away with that and tell you how to, your makeup and so on. The beautiful girls, and there was a young widow who had had a little baby, about a year old, and Mexican Mary fired her, and she went up to, this poor waitress went up to Trudgeon and cried. She said, Mr. Trudgeon, she said, I've got to have a job. She said, I've just got this baby on my own. He said, I'm sorry, but he said, what Mary says goes. And later, of course, there was a scandal that he had taken up in a red light district there, the sandbar, the famous sandbar, infamous sandbar,
what was that,
old Mary? Casper. And the girl sitting there out there in the streets on the lower end of Casper with the lantern.
Well, that was your famous house.
See that one? That came from Jim Moore had gave me that in 1929. It came from one of those little huts on the sandbar. The girls had those beautiful girls, and they'd hang a red lantern on the street. Come on in.
Uh-huh.
And one time, after Bill and I were married, he took me in there, and we met some of those girls. There's so much, so much. In writing this book about my Wagner and Schultz relatives, it's so hard to keep things in chronological sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish, I'm very sincere, I wish that everybody could have had as happy a marriage as Bill and I did. Son Bill had a wonderful father. And I don't know, there was something so terribly romantic about it. Now, don't get me wrong. We had a quarrel over there, Salt Lake, and I wish I had that. Yeah, that beautiful flapper outfit that I had. It was a cape with fringe on it. And we had a quarrel. And when we got home, our little house there in Dutch Camp, I yanked off those beautiful amber beads he gave me. I still have them for my 20th birthday. I threw them across the floor. And that wasn't all. I packed my suitcase and was going to leave him. This is so I don't know, we were sitting out there in the porch one. About 30 years later, Bill said, Edith, what in the hell are we fighting about? I said, darn if I know. But everybody has ups and downs.
Well, then, when did you start writing?
I've been writing all my life.
Have you?
And that's the truth. That's why I'm a little bit sore that she put in there, Edith likes history and so forth. She did not state my resume, and I'm sorry. She did Bill's, thank heavens. The first time I got printed and got paid, $5, was with the woman's page editor of the Denver Post, and it was called The Perfect Man. And to show you these little tidbits, and so Bob Burke was here one night, and Billy said, Mom, get that out. And his favorite is To One Who Got Away. It's a picture of Billy sitting there with a great big trout.
Mm.
And his dad, come here, I'll show you. The pictures. Got away, a Meadowlark time, Timberline, got a letter from the preacher. A Song of the Grand Tetons is my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Well, how old were you when this first one in the Denver Post for $5 get published?
When did it get published?
Yeah, how old were you?
Oh, I was, I was 19 when I was married, about 19.
19, you've been writing quite a long time then.
And for the Hunting and Fishing magazine and the Outdoors and various magazines and articles that were printed, and my editors and the publishers always encouraged me, and they never did correct or they should be different as Jean has. Now Billy said, "Mom, I can recognize that. It sounds like a what she wrote. Sounds like a fifth grader in school or something." Instead of giving the resume. And then he said, "I can see every place." He said, "You did not say that, did you? You didn't say tribe people." I said, "I didn't." And I said, "It makes me sore." I said, "Tribesmen." And even when I had these Christmas cards and everybody in Bill's lineage, of which he truly was very proud, and I am too, and so is Billy. What did I start to say?
How about how she changed words, like tribesmen?
He said, "I knew you didn't write that." And he said, every once in a while, Billy would catch something, and we were supposed to, we were supposed to have okayed it before she sent it to the publishers, but she sent it to the publishers, and she left out the three supplements.
Mm.
And you know, that's half of my, I'm just still grieving over that. Mm. Billy has that trunk in there, but he said, "Mom, don't worry, I'll get that picture out sometime, and it will be, because it's a classic." He was only 18 months old when we did. That's how thorough our research was to find these relatives of Chief Washakie, if they knew anything of Jenny. And when they answered our questions and so forth, they haven't. And that's when Billy was so little, he hung on the cane.
Okay, so I'm just saying here that Jenny was the first wife of Beaver Dick. We
yes.
didn't say that before. We should probably say that in case anybody in the future.
Well, unlike many other white trappers who married, who had Indian wives without benefit of clergy, the marriage of Beaver Dick and Jenny was performed by a white minister. That should tell us something about him. And speak of human interest, how much more of human interest do you want? Several of the readers have said that they had to cry a few times when they read the tragedy of his family dying one by one like that.
Mm-hmm.
The tragedy that the smallpox epidemic. Going back to 63 when he was traveling with his pack spring to Fort Hall and the Utah settlements. He stopped one night at a Bannock encampment and the Indian woman, tadpole, was in hard labor, which is rather unusual for an Indian woman, or anybody for that matter. So Beaver Dick assisted in the birth. And this little premature little girl was born, who was called Susan Tadpole. Her mother's name was Tadpole. And Tadpole and Pam Pigimina, full-blooded Bannocks, promised Beaver Dick, said, "Now when she's of marriageable age, we will give her to you to marry." Well, that was against his scruples and his Christian belief and all this and that. And besides, he was truly very deeply in love with this little Jenny. Well, after Jenny and the children died, he did marry the baby. He delivered at birth. He was 16 years old, and that's Billy's great-grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Now, talk about it has everything in it. And I repeat, I've been told that what really sold the book was that it reads more like a novel.
Now, when you write, are you going to write anything like about your life in Wyoming?
I have 100 pages written in longhand. It hurts me now, but I have that little typewriter bank. If they're so really, some of it is so terrible in my life. I tell about my experience. It's really terrible, but it was a marvelous experience. Now, it sounds like fiction. Now my family broke up, and I had 2 weeks, two or three weeks before I finished the ninth grade. I'd worked out, and they kicked me out of that house. The folks all took off, and my mother went to Shadon, Nebraska, to help my sister Emma when her baby Harry boy was born. So they notified me that I had to get the hell out of there. And there was a company, the Refinite Company, a colony of houses. Well, at the end of that was a lady preacher named Leona Brocious. And I thought, oh, I've got to. And then I packed my little cardboard suitcase. And I went down there to see. I thought, I've got to finish that ninth grade. And you've got to believe this. And it started to snow. And I had on my black Goliath stockings and Oxfords and cheap little suitcase. And I went to the preacher. Said, well, it tells us if you have a sorrow, go to your preacher. Uh-huh. Are you okay? So I walked down there and sounds of music were coming from Leona Brocious' house. It was choir practice, and of course I always joined that. It wasn't because we could sing, but everybody has some kind of a way they can, you know, handle a tune. And it was snowing, and they were singing high key, "Throw out the lifeline across the dark way, there is a brother whom someone should save," and so on. And I thought, well, I'm not anybody's brother, but I'm a sister, and I sure as heck can use some help. So I went, and silence. So Leona Brocious, Miss Brocious, opened the door. She looked at me, and she had buck teeth. And I said in this writing, she reminded me of our this big fat mare Beauty we had, who had teeth like that. She'd bite us. But I said, the only thing is Beauty didn't have little fillings, little gold fillings with the snow glinting on them. And I told her, I said, "Miss Brocious, if I could stay here all night, maybe I could surely get a job again with Charlie Hess, wash dishes or something. But I just can't drop out now because all this will be lost." Oh, she was sorry. Oh, yes. And slowly, slowly, she shut the door in my face.
That was a preacher's home?
Yes. And all the kids looked, you know, my schoolmates. And I started back up the street. Well, honey, on this L, there was a little white house, and in it lived Jenny and Claude Johnson. They had a little five-year-old boy. So I walked up there and sat there, and they had still had a light on, and it was snowing. And I felt sorry for myself, and I started crying. All at once, the door opened, and Jenny Johnson said, "Edith, for crying out loud, what are you doing out there? Ah, get in here." And so I told her I was homeless and penniless and all that crap. You know, I shouldn't say that. She said, "Come on, get in here. Go in there." They had a little tiny house. I think the whole thing wasn't any bigger than that room. One little tiny little bedroom in this kitchen and so forth. So they went out, and she and her husband had a conversation. She said, "Edith," she said, "you know what we're doing, don't you?" And I said, "Honey, of course I do." They had a boot, still, a bootleg still in the backyard. She said, "I'll tell you what we'll do. Cross your heart and hope to die you'll never go out there and look at that." I crossed my heart and I hope to die. And she said, "Now look, every Friday night or Saturday night, you know that Claude and I take a truckload of our booze to Harrison, Nebraska. Well, I will feed you and give you a place to sleep here if you take care of little five-year-old Claude." Oh, thank God. So their house was so little, but I slept on a pallet of quilts behind the door while these people took their load to Harrison, Nebraska. Of course, there was a war on. And I made it. That's how I made it. And from then on, it was toil and labor, and it was a kind of a caste system. If you worked your way through school, your board meeting, you didn't belong to that group. Now, the teachers warned you that you shouldn't walk to school with them. And I also got a job there with Nell Bannon, who was the principal. And instead of being admired as they are today, you didn't belong to that, unless you did, and you're so forth. Of course, they didn't hurt me too badly. And T.R. Crawford was very good to me, and so was his wife Bertha, who wrote to me later. But I had to do all the washing from there. And in all that time, in my senior year with Mrs. Howe, who had a boarding house, they never gave you as much as a handkerchief. You were the girl who worked for the boarding room. So, and then Mrs. Howe had about 12 or 15 shad and normal pupils, and also from the high school. And at noon, then I'd rush home and wash those dishes, and I know they weren't washed as well as they should have been, and the kids would make fun of me and hear, "We better get going now. The last bell's going to ring. There goes Edith Schultz," and I'd run as fast as I could to, you know, get there. And the boys would be standing by the lockers, and I had my books there. I'm going, "Who in the hell does she think she is, that Edith Schultz? She's just working for board and room." That's what I had. I had my pride and self-esteem, and if one of them had asked me for a date, I'd have wept on the shoulder. And they couldn't figure me out. But I knew what I was after, and that is one thing about my life, as little as I was. What do you want out of life? Well, because my mother objected so much to book learning, that's what I wanted. How wonderful it was then when I finished, they'd asked me if I had ever taught school as a teacher. And then, as I say, now there's the preacher, and there's these people. I regret that these people who are unsung and unknown were true Christians. And I quit going to, I take little Claude to Sunday school and dress him up in his little pongee shirt and everything, and then I went back, I didn't go back in. And the preacher, the lady preacher, Leona Brocious, thunders and roars and everything, said, "Now that young girl is in the den of iniquity." No kidding. Who was a Christian?
And she turned you out, so when
Why, sure. When Jenny took me in. Billy said, Mom, you've lived enough for free people, and I said, I know it.
But now when you went to Midwest, people there were different? They were.
Oh, yeah, we were all alike. We were all alike. Farmers and ranchers farmers from all over. Mm-hmm. No, we didn't have that in Midwest.
Did you have a garden or anything in Midwest?
Yes, we had the prettiest, we hauled in dirt. We had a beautiful yard. And that's why when the company sold the houses, they gave us four choices. They said, get the Thompsons up here. We moved several times. I brought the 20-year Lamb and Rose down last year with Philly, and it still blooms every year. And the beautiful clematis there in front of the yard, which was unheard of in the Midwest. And,
Is Midwest similar to what here? I mean, the dry climate and sagebrush?
It's similar then. And then we'd have entertainment come up. Oh, and the Crystal Bar over there, that was a kind of a fleshy joint.
No, people cared about each other, and they, first prize in music when he graduated, playing his clarinet, and his dad. And his dad say, sit in with pose. And anybody that came and said they had a degree in music, Bill would be like the bull singing a red flag. He'd say, here's a piano, here's a sax, what do you want? And here's one of his bands in Edgerton.
Oh, okay.
And there's our beloved Gail, a big tall gal like me, and I still hear from her. She and Bill. See, the sax, he played the alto sax.
So did he do this? How long did he play in the band?
Oh, he had several bands. Oh, I...
He kept it up for...
Yeah. You mean Bill, or Big Bill?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. And the entertainment. Mm-hmm. So, when Bill was real tiny, maybe 3 years old, and I say, son, if you take a warm bath, I'll take you over to Crystal and you can hear Daddy play. Billy sat in with the professionals, and we never ran a dime on his music lessons or his instruments. But he has his dad's tenor, too.
Did bands ever come in from elsewhere up there?
Yes, the Powder River Band, and they were hot. They were good. There's something about that music. This wonderful life, and of course, darn lonesome. Billy and Donna were married in our house there in the Midwest. Shane was 4 years old, and Billy adopted Shane, Donna's son. And they headed back to Green River. And I remember those two big men, Billy ran up to his dad and embraced him, and he said, Dad, he said, I only wish that my children will have as happy childhood as I had. And we went,
no.
His father said, let's go to the Green River, have beer. Alas and alack, it wasn't to be. See, that marriage broke up. Rita's a wonderful wife.
When you were first married to Bill, how were the marriages up in Midwest? Did most people stick together?
Yes.
There weren't too many divorces or anything?
And, there was a great big woman, her name was Thompson, too. What was her first name? Oh, she, Harrigan, and her husband and Bill were buddies. They worked on the wooden rigs. And she kind of had a crush on Bill, but this is really funny. All the mob's music, and of course they'd have to go out and have a drink once in a while. And she had her oxfords on, and she'd run like hell there in that red silk dress, and she'd grab Bill, and they'd go like that, and Bill was a big man, too. And he'd run, and she'd run after him until he got outside, and she kept chasing him and another musician. So they ran in an outdoor toilet and peeked out to see if she was still there. Now, she was a good, moral person. But it was funny. And there was very little of that, stepping out and so on. Very little.
Do you have any Mormons up there?
No. Not until about the last few years that I was up there. This is not on tape, is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'm saying something that's kind of irrelevant. It doesn't have to be said. Speaking of the Mormons, Rita was raised a Mormon. And I've been so lonely and so depressed and so angry at myself, And several times I've gone to Billy's place in that beautiful spire against the skyline, Baptist Church. Well, I was baptized in the Baptist Church. Of course, I'm an old sinner. So I went to church a few times. Oh, they were so nice. I took up a brochure. The minister's name is Jacobson, isn't it? And so I went another Sunday, and they had a guest preacher, another man. And the minister himself was sitting there in the front seat, a pew. And this other strange preacher was conducting the services. And then he burst into a rage, and he was giving Hail Columbia to the Mormons. And he said, they kept us there. And he said, 9 years ago, there wasn't a Mormon there. And look what's happened since and all that. You know what I thought? I'm not defending the Mormons, but I thought that was in terrible bad taste. You shouldn't have done that. I'm not sticking up for it. But to condemn another's religion, whether you're Catholic or Baptist. And I just kind of quit going. I just lost all my...
Is that up in Midwest?
Right here.
In Green River, okay. Right.
Across from the high school.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know. It just shows bad taste, what he said was true. Mm-hmm. I've seen all kinds of people. And it was my senior year. I was working for Mrs. Howe, who had a boarding house there. And, this beautiful, what was his name, Jack? He was the football captain. And he was also the president of the senior class. He said, I'm sorry, but he said, you're in arrears for $5 for your senior dues. But I didn't know where I was going to get my $5 from. But by the good way, my Uncle Adam, who couldn't write or read English, and he was a great gambler, and I went to the post office one day, and praise God, there was a $5 bill. And I rushed in and I said to John, what? Oh, he was a beautiful man. Of course, I always did cater to the dark guy. I said, John, I said, here it is. He said, it's been paid to you. I said, what? He said, I nearly fainted. Who paid it? He said, I know. He said, I'm sworn to secrecy. I said, John, please tell me who paid for that. Who would do that for me? He said, all right, you crossed your heart and hope to die again. And he said, Mr. Skinkle. And I said, what? He was the superintendent of the high school at Shad, Nebraska. And I mustn't tell, but you know what? Looking back, I wish I had dishonored that promise. And thank that dear man, letting know how I appreciated it. Talk about $5 now, what is it? But that's what I owed. That he, and all at once, out of all these, this travail, and I cry, everybody fight, and I can't stand to have anyone say an unkind word to me even now. These good people who are never heard of, who are the salt of the earth, like Mrs. Fowler, the little Russian German, who are kind. And I would like them to get more credit somehow. To be a celebrity, like a movie star or singer or something, is something else. Mm-hmm. But the world will never hear of them, but they help make life easier. And they cared. They cared for you. And not to ever belittle someone because they had little education or anything, and that's cruel. That's cruel. Now, there are some very funny things in that story I'm writing. When Papa took out his naturalization papers, he flunked the first test. If the county seat was Hot Springs, South Dakota, but he the second time he went, he became a naturalized citizen. And this German-Russian family who lived on a homestead north of us, the Ludwig Fowlers, and so it was blizzarding and everything. The Fowlers came down, and here sat Katrine, and here sat Ludwig over there. And Papa was coaching Ludwig on questions that they would ask him about the United States. So, how many stars are there in the flag, and who's president, and how many stripes are there, and so forth, and what are the parties, and so on, so on. So Papa said, Ludwig, why do we celebrate the 4th of July? And Ludwig scratched his head, and Papa said, Tink, Ludwig, Tink! And there's little Katrina, with her two little snag teeth like that, little fish teeth. Little lump of hair here, and all smallpox. She said, Ludwig, don't be so dumb. Everybody knows that the 4th of July is George Washington's birthday. Ha 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 ha. You know, I bring that in, see? You know, instead of saying somebody's a son of a bee, tell why. Let them have. Now, for instance, this little puppy ran to meet you and you kicked it. Well, that would be very cruel. That shows you that you're unkind. So that's the style of writing.
Did your family, did you folks move to Wyoming too, or?
Mm-hmm. Jim Morey, Emma's husband, came up there first, and then my mother and my father worked in the blacksmith shop. And he was a powder man. And now I can put all the pieces together. Why my mother was so cruel and mean to us, and when she was hungry, how she'd ride off and eat someplace else. The links are all there. And my mother was so terribly embarrassed, you know, she was proud of her German lineage. But they called her, her older sisters called her a Polak, because she was born in Poland, and the reason for that was that she was, her mother, Katrina, and her father, Heinrich, were coming back across the Polish border from Gdansk, Poland. And good Lord, my mother went into, Matilda went into labor pains. So Heinrich got out and put her on the wagon seat and stood up and beat those horses till they galloped their heads off. They almost made it to the boundary, but they didn't. There was a baby wail, a cry, and so that's Matilda ended the world, and she was in Polish soil. Well, her brothers and sisters never did let her get over that. They called her the Polak, although she had the blue eyes and the... I can kind of understand that now, why she did that, because then Ma got so bitter that she decided that she'd take everything there was, to hell, the devil take the hindmost. But it takes me so long, and there's just a kind of a deep sorrow in all that. And so one of the officials came down there and said, Edith, the Fred says one thing and Walt says another. Where was your mother born? In Poland or Germany? Well, I wasn't quite sure. And Ma was all crippled up with arthritis, and my brother Walt and his wife were taking care of her. And I said, Ma, she said, that's nobody's damn business where I was born. And I said, Ma, come on now, you have to be born. They don't care if you were born in Afghanistan. They want it for their kids' records. So Ma told me that, mm-hmm. that she was actually born in Poland. Mm-hmm. And it goes on like that. And the sorrow and the hurt, oh, I don't know. And my father threatened suicide with that damn shotgun. Today I'm scared that the gun shed. Mm-hmm. But he didn't use a shotgun, he used poison. He poisoned himself. And Uncle Gus was also suicide, who hanged himself.
Was there a lot of suicide that time, that era? A lot of people?
Oh, I've got that box under the bed. You wonder where that stuff is. And he said, Mom, that's powerful writing. And I said, Billy, I don't want to tell all the... Oh, he said, you've got to. And I told Bob, where my sister Olga was born, indeed our beautiful sister Olga that was lost. Well, they wondered why there were, the women wondered why there was, you know, everybody nursed the babies, and there were 2 years between each kid. Well, there were 3 years between Olga and my brother Walter, and he said, well, what did you do, Matilda? Well, she didn't do anything. They didn't know then that she was. So Papa was working graveyard at the Homestake gold mine there in Lead, and Ma had a miscarriage, and the sheets were all full of blood. How did I know that? Back on later. And so it was cold. So Papa opened the lid of the stove and got that fetus and threw it on the flames. And my mother said, ah, Albert, how could you? How could you? And of course, later on, and Emma remembers, she's 4 years older than I. Those are the things. How could you? Wie konntest du das tun? Wie konntest du das tun? And I'm very glad, well, I'm not exactly bilingual, but I can certainly make myself understood. And honey, I could tell things in German that, well, there is no such thing as a true translation. It's always different. You put it down. But there's always humor in somebody who's a dumb esel, who wants to make a fool out of somebody else, and he turns it, that's writing for you, see? Mm-hmm. The authors, stay out.